And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Shane, looks like you got your wish. Tyson Helton on his way out of Knoxville, getting his ass out of town, taking the Western Kentucky job, head coaching job. This is Shane, how do you have the SEC's lowest scoring offense and get a head coaching job? It makes no sense to me, but hell, what are your thoughts on that one?
Maybe they're going to put him in as defensive coordinator. I don't know. Who knows? I am so happy. And I don't know if this has more to do with gracefully firing him or if this was something he had planned long ago. Because I'm hearing mixed things, like this job was secured so quickly that this is something that maybe he was thinking about prior to this Vanderbilt game. And maybe he didn't put enough enough work in to for the Tennessee game, you know, that he was already out. So, but then on the other hand, I've heard that Pruitt was going to have to fire him. So they went out and they pumped him up for Western Kentucky so that he had a place to go. So I don't know. I'm hearing two different things.
Well, you hit on an interesting note there, Shane, maybe for the fact that he may have been checked out already, but have you seen this? I don't know if you did, but I believe it was after Saturday's game, after the loss of Vanderbilt, there were some people that are, I don't even know who it was because I don't follow them, but there were people in the media that I was seeing, people were telling me that this team had already checked out and they basically, you know, the guys that were leaving didn't want to play in a bowl game. They didn't want to, you know, go through grueling practices for Jeremy Pruitt. And I don't know if you're buying any of that talk. I guess that's my question to you. But why in the hell would players, they could have quit before the Kentucky game. They beat the shit out of Kentucky and then they just quit. That doesn't make any sense to me. What are your thoughts on people suggesting that?
Yeah, I'm not buying that. I mean, like you said, we never would have had a shot with Kentucky if that was the case. And I really think they tried hard against Missouri, but just Missouri just had an answer for everything they did. So, you know, there was a lot of seniors on this team that got to play, and you know, those are usually your team leaders. So I doubt that they're just rolling in the last game they ever played, just not ready to play or ready to go. So I'm not buying that.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at it, Shane, remember there was a time, you know, Garantano obviously got hurt in that Missouri game. That affected that one. And Keller Chris threw that critical interception right before halftime. Let's say Tennessee scores a touchdown game. That's maybe a damn game.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You look on at the Vanderbilt game. I know they didn't play hard, and it did look like they – I don't want to say they quit, but I think I've heard a lot more people say they ran out of gas. I kind of agree with that. But, hell – I mean, the Vanderbilt quarterback was like 17 of 18, and they had a 17-point lead. Now, granted, that's a lot of points for this damn Tennessee team, but I don't know. If your quarterback's playing perfect, you'd think – I don't know. It still felt like Tennessee was in it. When they scored that touchdown right after half, It felt like Tennessee maybe was going to get some momentum. I didn't know they were going to go back-to-back three and outs, but that's all she wrote there. But, Shade – so that's basically the biggest coaching movement that we have that's coming down the pipe. But
now there's a lot of rumors for that spot. I think that's, you know, something that was interesting. I've heard everything from Hugh Freeze to old Gruden. I mean, obviously that's not legit, but you know, you put out a short list and there were some interesting names on it.
Yeah, let me bring that up here, Shane. Kind of the guys that are on my list here, and these are either guys that I know Jeremy Pruitt really trusts, he's got a history with them, or guys that he's gone up against, that it would make a lot of sense why he'd like, you know, to have them on his staff. But here we go. The Cleveland Browns interim offensive coordinator, Freddie Kitchens. He's a former Alabama quarterback. And from what I understand, he and Pruitt are very, very tight. They go back all the way, I think, to their high school days, maybe even before that. So that's a name that makes a lot of sense. And people, I've heard a lot of people saying, well, why in the hell would an NFL offensive coordinator leave that job to become a Tennessee offensive coordinator? And the simple fact that obviously Cleveland's staff got, you know, terminated this year, they're not going to hire a new coach and say, well, hell, let's keep the interim offensive coordinator. This guy's going to be looking for a job here as soon as the NFL season. I'm not saying he can't get an offensive coordinator job in the NFL. I don't know. I don't cover the NFL, but I don't think that's very likely. But if it comes down to jumping at a running back or tight end coach position in the NFL or offensive coordinator at Tennessee, I think that's an easy choice for Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah.
The other name I got here, Hugh Freeze. And
yeah, buddy.
Why I have that is, from what I understand, Shane, you got to be careful what you hear out there from anybody regarding Hugh Freeze, because from what I understand, he is throwing his damn name out. It may not be him, it may be his agent, but they are throwing his name out for every damn job that's basically out there. They're basically looking for offers. This job that Tyson Helton got, Western Kentucky, Hugh Freeze tried to get that one, and they said no. So they're hiring people like whatever the fuck his name is, Helton. Forget him. They're hiring Helton over Freeze. That tells you how toxic this guy is. And obviously, you know, Alabama's had their issues defending his offense. I think that gives a lot of credit to why Jeremy Pruitt would want him. But going a step further, Pruitt considered hiring him as an offensive coordinator last offseason, and he wasn't the only one. Missouri, Alabama wanted him as a QC guy, I believe, and I think there may have been one other SEC team that looked at him, but the SEC shut that down. They did not want him back in the league while Ole Miss was on sanctions. Ole Miss is obviously no longer on sanctions, but that doesn't mean that the SEC would automatically let him come back in as an offensive coordinator. I don't know if they have the power to prevent that from happening, but I think they can basically say they don't want it to happen. I think that's what happened at Alabama.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to remember that there's a lot of boosters involved, and the last thing they want is to shame the brand. So, I mean, even if, you know, you bring him in and you think he's the great hire and all that, but with that baggage and, you know, just, I don't know, just the spiritual side of it, you know, I mean, just that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And, you know, I talked to a Mississippi State fan today and an Ole Miss fan, and it was just funny how torn they were between them. And, you know, there was one saying he was a hell of a recruiter, obviously, but then the other one was saying, you know, I hope he never gets a coaching job again. So it's just that, I mean, it's still fresh. And it would be hard to bring him in, I think, in a big Power Five conference like this right now, with a title like an offensive coordinator. But I mean, he would definitely be. I mean, as a fan, and if you can look past that stuff and you just want to win games, then yeah, I'd love to have Freeze, but I just don't think it's going to happen, man.
Let me tell you a story here, Shane. So another possible roadblock for, you know, I think Pruitt has the freedom to basically hire whoever he wants without going to Philip Fulmer. But I don't think he would, in this instance, I think he would have to get the okay from Fulmer. And I'm not so sure that would happen with this one. I don't think Fulmer and Freeze are that close at all. Mm-hmm. And years ago, I'll tell you this story, Shane. This is Hugh Freeze. There was a high school coach in Memphis. He was told, basically, you know, get Michael Orr to Tennessee and we'll have a position on the staff for you by Philip Fulmer. And from what I understand, Hugh Freeze was just acting at times like a child during these, like, you had people like Nick Saban, who was the LSU coach, in the home with Michael Orr, and Hugh Freeze walking out on Nick Saban during a damn recruiting official visit, or I guess that would be a coach. They don't really call him official or unofficial. It's just in-home visit, what have you.
Right.
Because Hugh Freeze already had this damn deal worked out with Tennessee where he could, if he got him in here, he would be on the staff. Now, of course, Michael Orr in the end chose to go to Ole Miss. And then what happened? Hugh Freeze tracked down old Ed Orgeron and said, hey, if you want to get the most out of this guy, hire me. You know, I've been coaching him. I've gotten all this talent out of him. If you want him to become anything, you got to hire me. So that's how he got on. So he's just kind of a snaky kind of guy. He's always been that way. And like, that's well before these scandals and everything. And yes, he's a good coach, but he's a very questionable character. And this is going all the way back to people that I know that played for him in high school. So, you know, people don't change. It's been 20 years, you know, since that point. So I don't know that he's changed, but there's a lot of interesting thing there, but,
little bit of a weasel.
A few other names I had here. Shane Wilfriend, that's obviously the Tennessee offensive line coach, and he has some experience calling plays for Colorado State. He's got experience coaching the offensive line there at Georgia. And I believe this is basically Jeremy Pruitt's best friend. I think they roomed at Alabama, so they know each other from way back. I would not rule out in-house candidates getting the job.
That's the Tennessee move, man, you know? I saw somebody say, if you hire Friend, then throw a lot of money at Pittman and try to get him back up here from Georgia.
No, that's not going to happen.
I know.
I mean, if Will Friend's the offensive coordinator, he is going to continue to coach the offensive line. I will tell you that right now. But you know, one name, Shane, I did not have on this list that I'll throw – that's another in-house candidate is Joe Osavent. And he's the quality control coach. That'd be a hell of a move there to go from quality control analyst to offensive coordinator. But this is a guy that, from what I understand, he basically revolutionized the RPO, you know, run pass options. But it's not quite what you're thinking. I mean, I think when people hear that, they think of damn Butch Jones. But this guy is more like they either run the ball or they're throwing a damn Hail Mary. And I'm not really sure how this worked out because I've not seen a whole lot of tape, but I've seen coaching clinics of this guy. He basically took over a program, Shane, in Brooklyn that didn't even have a football program. And then in 2 years, they're winning championships. So that's how this guy got on this staff, because he's not only is he, you know, some people say he's just like a revolutionary offensive coordinator. I've been told if he gets this job, Tennessee is going to be running stuff that has never been seen in the SEC. Maybe that's what you want. Maybe you don't want. I continue to say Tennessee is not going to beat Georgia and Alabama by running what they're running, because they don't have the players and they may never have the players. That's just the truthfulness of it. You might have to do a little something different, but how aggressive, how revolutionary does Jeremy Pruitt want to be on? I don't know, but you know, if you hire this guy, you already had him on staff for a year. You already know about him. He's locked down some junior college. Osafet runs the junior college recruiting for Tennessee, and they've done fairly well since he's been in there. And so that is another one to watch. And then finally, I got Chip Lindsey, who a lot of people they don't like because Auburn is struggling on offense right now. But, you know, what's the thing we keep hearing is Gus Malzahn is just controlling that damn thing. He's filtering plays through him. The offensive line is a mess. I don't understand how that's Chip Lindsey's fault. This is only his second year. Go back and watch last year's Auburn team. That offensive line with the players and a running back, they were basically the most balanced and I think best offense in the SEC, and that was Chip Lindsey's first year. And then finally, the guy I got here, Dan Enos, Alabama quarterback coach, used to be Arkansas offensive coordinator. That guy, he's a hell of a coordinator and quarterback coach. And I think that's the hire. I think that is the true home run here. He's got no issues. He's been a head coach. He's been a very successful head coach at the G5 level, successful coordinator. Not an elite recruiter, but you got enough elite recruiters on Jeremy Pruitt's staff. You need some damn coaches, particularly at the quarterback position. So that could be another guy to watch.
Yeah, I like Enos. I think I've heard a lot of great things with him, especially the quarterback. So getting Garitano going, getting you know, some of these young guns that we got down there, I think that would be an interesting hire.
All right, Shane, we talked too much about this damn offensive coordinator position.
Because that's all we got, buddy. The season's over. It's the coaching carousel.
Just when everyone thought Gus Malzahn was safe, Shane, maybe he's not. I'm going to be honest with you, Shane. I'm not familiar with this guy, but you know, I've done some digging on him. It looks like he's a legitimate guy. His name is Josh Moon. He works for, AL Reporter? But basically, he's saying that what he's hearing is there's somewhat of a power struggle down there at Auburn, and this seems to be a legitimate report here. But according to Josh Moon, the powers that be there at Auburn are basically decided to move on from Gus Malzahn, and they've raised the money to get him out. And I don't know, it's kind of sketchy because he's not saying who they're going after, but he's basically saying it's a huge name that they were surprised was interested in this job, and they're going to make a move on him. And after that came out, there's been flight tracker information. That's the best time of year, Shane, flight tracker. but apparently there's planes going from Alabama to Norman, Oklahoma. And some people saying that's former coach Bob Stoops there, who obviously won a national championship at Oklahoma. I mean, maybe Lincoln Riley. I mean, I don't see anyone saying that, but if they're going to Norman, Riley makes more sense than Stoops. What are your thoughts on all this craziness here?
Oh, I have been on the flight trackers before, Mike, and they never work out. I mean, for every flight tracker came out, there was 10 explanations on why it can't be. So I'm not going to dig in that. This is one article. You know, there's a lot more articles coming out saying that Gus is good. So don't be surprised if nothing happens. If Gus comes back, maybe they make a change at coordinator or something like that. But I don't see them spending, what is it, $32 million on, I mean, granted, I know Auburn could come up with the money, but that's a lot of money to just get rid of somebody.
Yeah, and what this guy is saying is basically, you know, Malzahn, it's not that he is fired. He's saying that they have the money. They're working hard to fire him. But I don't know. I guess they're just trying to make sure they've locked down their next candidate. Because like you said, you can't spend 30 whatever million and then not have your guy ready to go immediately thereafter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And why would you – I mean, honestly, why would you think Stoops would want that job? I mean, he had a perfect job there in Oklahoma and just walked away from it because he wanted to spend time with his family and, you know, said he lost his dad about the same age that he was. And, you know, he just wanted to spend more time with his family and less time with the football. So I just don't see him getting back in. And if he did, I don't see it being at Auburn, especially with Saban still down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about this one, Shane? This is something that we hinted at on the previous podcast here. Derek Mason, his name connected to Colorado. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, hell, if Tennessee could get Derek Mason, Will Muschamp, Nick Saban, and maybe Dan Mullen all take other jobs, a lot of these losing streaks go away.
Yeah, I love it. I put out a tweet that you know, Tennessee's been helping Vanderbilt coaches get better jobs since 2013, you know. and Mason is he's crazy not to. I mean, they've got a new athletic director, and you know, when these new ADs come in, it's always bringing in their guy. You know, Vanderbilt is somewhat hot right now. It's a hot commodity, and, you know, they go into a bowl game. But Vanderbilt has obviously made the commitment that they are not going to put money into the football program. So why stay? What do you have to gain to being, you know, the best 6 or 8 win team in the East? You know, I think that a Colorado job makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry if there's any Vanderbilt fans out there. I don't think the 6 of you subscribe to this, but your job basically is a stepping stone job. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago people were saying, should Derek Mason be fired? So,
yeah.
I mean, if he has an opportunity like this, I think he should go somewhere where they're a little bit more committed to football. Unfortunately, that's just not Vanderbilt. I think Derek Mason is always going to be fighting with one arm behind his back due to the lack of support, lack of fans, lack of facility, lack of stadium. I mean, I could go on and on. They do have a lot going for them. I'm not trying to trash their program because I think, I thought when he first got there, I thought he was terrible. And I think that was because, he had taken over, from one of the better coaches in the nation. And there was a terrible drop off, but he has slowly built that thing back up to where, they're a consistent threat. Yes, they're just 6-6 this year. I think they could have easily won 9 games. They could have easily won only 4. You know what I mean? So they're just kind of like right there in the middle, and that's a very admirable job considering all the disadvantages I noted there. But I just don't know what the ceiling is there for him unless, maybe he just loves Nashville and he wants to be here forever. But like you said, even the new AD may not like him. So I don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty there, particularly like we've noted with, Georgia's rolling. Dan Mullen looks like he'll have it rolling. Will Muschamp certainly ahead. If Jeremy Pruitt can find his footing here, I don't think, and even hell, Mark Stoops has really got Kentucky going well. And if hell, Missouri, I mean, if they continue to trend, I mean, they're always going to be at the bottom of that list unless they have a hell of a quarterback, and,
3 weeks ago, Mason was on, he was begging. He was begging Nashville fans to come out and watch the game. Trying to get them to own or buy into to this game. And if you watch the Tennessee Vanderbilt game, the entire stadium was orange, man. This is not a football town. This is somewhere you go if you got heart problems or, you got to see a doctor. You go to Nashville. You don't go there to play football or watch football. They've been good. This is it. This is their ceiling. They're not going to do like Kentucky. I just don't see it happening. Now can they just all of a sudden get some freak athletes and take it to the next level? Possibly, but you're talking something, every 40 years. Mason is not a bad coach. He's a hell of a defensive coach, and he puts them boys in some good spots this year. And I think he's got to take the first ticket out of here. If he's got a good Power 5 job like Colorado, he'd be crazy not to.
Let me ask you this, Shane, because we hit on this on the last episode. Barry Odom's name has been attached to the open Louisville job. I think this is from Columbia Tribune, but they've reached out to Odom, and he says he, quote-unquote, has no interest in the Louisville job. Are you buying that, and what do you think? You think Odom is solid? I mean, he just got a 2-year extension, but still, I believe he's the lowest paid coach, and from what I've heard, he's putting, I don't know if it's him or his agent, but his name has been thrown out there for a number of openings. And, I've said, I'm of the opinion that he wants to stay at Mizzou, but I think he wants more money, and he wants more money for his assistants. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're right, man. You said this the other day, and it made sense. He's from there. He's played there. He loves Missouri, and Missouri loves him. And he's put some good teams out there, and he's given that front office some a little pressure, if you will, and make them show him how committed they are to football and competing for the East.
All right, Shane. So that's all I got on the hot seat talk. You got anything before we jump around the league?
Did we hear anything else about Dabo going anywhere? Because I heard he was pretty pissed about everybody mad at him.
Sure, Shane, we could get into that one. So apparently this was on the ACC teleconference, which obviously I'm not in on those calls, but he basically had a big spiel where apparently, he was going on about the fans being upset that South Carolina scored so many damn points on them. And I think that what was his main point there, Shane? I think it was basically like, hell, if you're not happy with us giving up 35 points but drilling our opponent and going 12-0, then my ass is going to leave because this is too much to ask for.
It's exactly what he's saying. And I don't know, man. It's just kind of interesting. It definitely perked my interest when I heard. It's just lining up with everything. You love rumors. You love if there's smoke, maybe there's a fire. And who knows? And if you're having to get on these conferences and defend a victory, you know, you should never have to apologize for a win. And so that happened, and I think it's important too just to touch base. Mac Brown is back in football, brother. 70-year-old is back in North Carolina.
You know what's funny, Shane? We laugh at Mac Brown because he is like a grandpa type figure.
Mm-hmm.
He is younger than Nick Saban.
Oh shit!
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, Nick Saban looks good for his age. How old is Mac Brown then? I thought he was 70.
They're the same age.
Oh, really? Okay. Upon further review.
And if we're going to laugh at Mac Brown, we got to laugh at Nick Saban, but he's kicking ass and taking names, so maybe it does work out for old Mac.
I love it, man. I loved it. I'd love to see some more of these old coaches come back out, man. It'd be awesome. So,
all right, Shay, let's jump around the league, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
Now let's go around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our players. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and you know, like every other, every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice. So you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's gonna be a street fight. This game's gonna be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully, you do. And you go back to it, man. This isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail, let's get to work.
All right, Shane, we got to talk about the most heated post-game fight I can remember in damn recent memory. Old Texas A&M, they were fined $50,000 for the post-game, not for the post-game incident, but for the damn fans storming the field. And beyond that, more videos have begun to leak out. I don't know why in the hell these videos haven't come out sooner. They're all coming out from, I think it had to do with the fact that LSU, I don't know if you've seen this, Shane, but they put out a video. So, let's rewind here for anyone that didn't catch yesterday's podcast or the story. But basically what happened is a LSU assistant by the name of Steve Cragthorpe, who's an older guy, he's got a damn pacemaker for God's sake, he was punched in the chest by Jimbo Fisher's nephew, a guy by the name of Cole Fisher, who Texas A&M has still yet to acknowledge who Cole Fisher is or if he works there or if he's Jimbo's Fisher or if they even know who that is for some reason. But he goes to multiple games and he's wearing Texas A&M gear and he was credentialed. So there's no way in hell they don't know who that is. And Jimbo Fisher said he had no idea this happened, even though there's video of Cole Fisher telling him it happened. But beyond that, Shane, so why this all happened, there's a guy by the name of Damian Craig, for those that don't know that name. He's a former receiver coach there at LSU. Now he's the receiver coach at A&M. But after the game, after the 7 overtime thriller, Craig basically ran across the field. You know, there was people all across the field, but he was the one that, you know, you don't see coaches going to the other sideline. You know what I mean? They stay basically in the field of play.
Yeah.
You rarely see him pass, I would say, midfield, because why in the hell would they go to the other sideline? But this guy came all the way to past the numbers of the other sideline. So all the way, basically, threw a damn headset at Coach O. And why would he do that? Because when Coach O took over for Les Miles, you know, it was in the middle of the year. They kept the staff intact. But as soon as Coach O got the full-time job, immediately thereafter, he fired Craig. And why would he do that, Shane? The story I've been told, Coach O found out that Damian Craig, while he was working for LSU, was out on the road recruiting for Florida State and Jimbo Fisher. So he must have had a deal worked out with Fisher that he was going to come down there anyway. So Coach O finds out about that, fires Craig, and Craig did go down to Florida State. Now, obviously, followed him to Texas A&M. So that's what started this whole deal. And I think, from what I understand, Cragthorpe told Damian Craig just to, I don't think he hit him or anything. There's no one saying that. He basically told him, you know, go to your other sideline. And that's when the damn Cole Fisher punched him. And there's all these videos coming out of a player by the name of John Battle. He's a defensive back. He kind of like sucker punches Cole Fisher. But it's like, hell, he just punched an old man. Like,
oh, man, that's what happens. You just get the first part, you know, and I don't know. So basically what happened, a disgruntled coach that got fired by O came over raising hell. Old man tries to stop him. This other kid punches old man in the pacemaker. And eventually the kid that punched him got sucker punched by an LSU player. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Has anybody came out and said what happened?
Well, Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M have released a statement, but it is pretty boilerplatey, Shane. I mean, it basically, I don't want to read the whole thing because it's so damn boring. I don't want to put anyone to sleep. But it just says, you know, they're aware of the incident. They've spoken to the SEC office, and A&M, LSU, and the SEC are examining video of what happened. And he says the matter has been addressed internally with his staff, and that he will demand, you know, the program can conduct itself and that meets the values and expectations of this great university. But he doesn't name anyone involved, and you have to wonder if that's because it's family involved and, you know, a coach that he's very close to that may or may not have done something kind of shady there at LSU. But I don't think A&M's going to say much more. But what are your thoughts on just, I don't want to call it a cover-up, but I guess they don't really give a damn, you know?
It is. They made a bigger deal about some dude throwing ice on Nick Saban at our game. So, I mean, this kid's over here slinging rainmakers to old men. And I don't know. And the $50,000 fine, I mean, I thought it was like designated at, was it $100,000?
Well, that is for the second violation. And I think the third one is like $150,000 or something. So this was the first time A&M has been tagged with this since the SEC made it illegal for fans to rush the field.
Oh, wait. So Kentucky has done this several times. That's why they got fined more?
Correct. Kentucky's got more reason to storm the field.
I guess. Who's, I'm just curious who's leading the pack here, you know, because obviously Texas A&M hasn't had that many good games. So I was just surprised that it was the 50,000 because I saw a lot of people on that damn field. And obviously from the footage we're seeing. So, man, what a tangled web. I mean, they got to do something here. You know, the old man got punched. Battle's probably going to get in trouble just because there's so many videos going around. But just because he's your nephew doesn't mean he gets out of, I mean, whatever you do to Battle, you probably need to do to his nephew. So that's what I'm expecting. Maybe he can't go to any more games or something for a while.
Well, Shane, speaking of just, you know, craziness here in the SEC. Obviously, we touched on, you condoned it, it seemed like, but the Egg Bowl brawl here, I condoned it as well. But the SEC has released a statement. Basically, Greg Sankey is fucking demanding that these shenanigans in the Egg Bowl ends. Here's what he had to say. It remains disappointing to see unnecessary actions during the Mississippi State and Ole Miss game. These actions are unacceptable. And my concern relates to bigger issues of the repeated incidents before, during, and after games between these two. These incidents have become far too common in this series. I require both ADs to meet with me in the SEC office to review past issues and develop a plan on the purpose of creating a healthy environment for this annual game. Good luck with that, sir, because unless you're going to host all these damn fans that are insane, but in a great way. I mean, that's why the SEC is where it is, because people care so damn much. But what in the hell is AD's going to do? I mean,
that's stupid. That's the dumbest thing I've heard today, Mike. I mean, I want you guys to be mad at each other, but I don't want you to hate each other. You know, it's like, good God, get out of here. I mean, they're literally 90 minutes away from each other. Yeah, there's people that work together that wear different jerseys to this game. So, I mean, this thing is a close, heated rivalry. We talked about it, and it's not going to change just because whatever, you know. See, even the Bulldogs fan. Bulldogs are mad, man. What's going on? So he's getting all fired up about the Egg Bowl again. So, you know, that's just That's what this game is. And don't try changing shit all the time. That's what they do. They overreact. Something happens, they overreact, they change all these policies, and the next thing you know, we can't tackle the quarterback, Mike.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if nothing happened last year in Starkville after these, you know, whatever, everything happened to Hugh Freeze and the violations and everything and the suspensions and the probation for Ole Miss. If not, and I understand what he's saying, that, like, you don't, the last thing you want to see is, like, remember that a couple years ago when I think it was the Pistons and the Pacers and the NBA were like, the players got into the stands, were fighting fans. Like, that's a nightmare. And obviously gun violence also at the stadium is a nightmare. That's why they've right. installed, you know, they're installing metal detectors at all games. They've done it at Mississippi State. They're doing it at all every SEC stadium. So I think that obviously maybe that he's saying that, but nobody wants that. But, you know, we've yet to see, as crazy as these rivalries are, this isn't damn South America where we're shooting people over goals. You know what I mean? Like, we're exactly. far removed from that. We there may be hate, there may be unhealthy hate, but I don't know. I think that, and like you said, this is not going to accomplish anything. I mean, and if there wasn't hate, Shane, this shit wouldn't be popular. You know what I mean? Like, that's why it is, because we care so much. And I don't know. Good luck with that, Commissioner. I guess is my spiel there.
Exactly. I mean, it was heated. Yes, there were some fights. Okay, great. But it's like Papa always said, did you die? You know, no, nobody died. So we moved on to the next day. You know, some people were bruised, but that's what this game's all about. That's what rivalries are all about. That's why we play this game, is, you know, my team's better than yours. So it's going to create some animosity. And if it bleeds onto the field, so what, man? That's awesome for you, Sankey. That's what pays your bills, man.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, it's time to get to the big game. We're going to do a little Georgia-Alabama talk here for the SEC championship game, obviously. And we've got comments today from Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. But before we get into those, I thought these were pretty interesting. These were comments from Georgia defensive lineman Jonathan Ledbetter. Obviously, I mean, I'm not saying anything nobody knows here. Alabama and Georgia met in the national championship last year. Georgia was dominating at halftime, and of course, the quarterback switch was made by Nick Saban. Tua got put in, and you know, the rest is history. But I thought this was really interesting from Jonathan Ledbetter, who noted that, hey, you know, they basically last year were not really ready for that to happen because there just wasn't enough film on Tua. And, he didn't say anything about necessarily thinking they were going to win at halftime. I'm sure they probably were thinking that. But here's Jonathan Ledbetter's response. We don't have the audio, so I'm just going to read it out here. But basically what happened last year when Tua got in. Last year, there just wasn't much tape really to watch. And he's talking about on Tua here. It was kind of a throw it in your face type thing. Just throw somebody out there because your number one guy isn't getting it done. We kind of game planned for Jalen Hurts the entire time. We saw what kind of player he was, what kind of plays he was making, and we really didn't have anything to go off watching Tua. It was in the game adjustments we have to make. We didn't know he was as elusive or had that kind of arm. I think watching tape on anybody kind of gives you a sense of comfortability knowing what they're going to do, knowing their tendencies, and the tape doesn't lie. Once you look at that, you see what people do. You can kind of gauge what type of player they are and what they like to do. So what are your thoughts on, I mean, I thought this was pretty cool that the Georgia defender kind of admits this. A lot of times seems like this type of information is kind of a little bit more guarded.
Yeah, and I think he's right. I think the tape is important. So like you said, something maybe you pick up on something that he's doing, or maybe different schemes that they're running. And, you know, but the bad part, the flip side of that coin, just talking about being surprised, how many games has Alabama really had to throw some stuff out there? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Citadel at half, they still weren't showing anything. So that's my only concern. Maybe the LSU game we got to see, that'd be good tape. But I really think that there's a lot of this offense that we haven't quite seen yet. And that's what Coach Smart was talking about, just the weapons that Alabama has.
Well, and, you know, the last thing I want to mention on these comments, these particular comments here, Shane, but this reminds me of 2014 when Kirby Smart was the defensive coordinator there for Alabama, and they were the heavy favorite against Ohio State. And they lost to Ohio State in the college football playoff. This was one of the first – you and I watched this game together, I believe. And it was the, like, Cardale Jones coming out party. And after the – well, this was months later, but Kirby Smart admitted they were not prepared for Cardale Jones. They didn't have enough film. It just kind of struck me that it's kind of these two massive games that basically decided national championships. Kirby Smart's defenses weren't prepared for the backup. So I think Alabama's got to just throw out Mac Jones, man, and they won't be beat.
You figured it out, huh? But look at, I mean, last year Tua played, didn't he? I mean,
he did, but I mean, he never played in any meaningful way. You know what I mean? Like, he would come in for fourth quarters, junk time,
like stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, hell, maybe that's the key to Georgia's success in this game is rolling him out. But I wouldn't put it past Georgia. But the way Jake Fromm is playing, I don't see that happening.
No, he was on it last week, so I don't either.
Well, speaking of that, Shane, that was one of the questions Nick Saban faced during his presser on here on Monday. He was asked, he didn't really have a ton to say. I guess he was even more guarded than usual, but I thought the most striking thing was his comments here on Jake Fromm. So here's the Alabama coach on Georgia's starting quarterback.
Well, I thought Jake was playing, you know, really well last year, played really well in our game. And I think he just gotten more confident with his knowledge and experience, you know, having played more games. I think he gets them in the right plays. He's smart. If he knows what you're in on defense, he's gonna throw it to the right place and do the right thing. So his efficiency and execution, I think, is what makes him an exceptionally good player, and he can make the throws that he needs to make, and he certainly helps all the players around him play better.
All right, Shane, so what do you take away from Saban's comments here on Jake Fromm?
Blah, 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 blah. That's the best quarterback we've ever faced. Just the typical Saban stuff. But, you know, this is probably the best. I don't know. I mean, Drew Locke, I think, is great, but I don't think he was great during that game. He didn't have Hall. He didn't have all his weapons. Fromm does. Then that, you know, having great weapons around you, that makes you a better quarterback. So, yeah, this is definitely going to be their toughest test of the year.
Now, do you put any credit, Shane, to – I know there's obviously been a ton of – well, not a ton because Alabama rarely loses, but when Alabama does lose, it seems to be against a dual-threat quarterback. Mm-hmm. There is a belief out there from a lot of people that Alabama cannot be beaten by a pocket passer. Do you buy that talk, or do you think if, like we're saying, because I think Jake Fromm, obviously, I mean, it's kind of obvious to say the quarterback's going to be an X factor, but if he continues to have just incredible performances with his arm, I think it's foolish to think Georgia can't compete in this game. Do you think that a non-mobile quarterback can beat Alabama?
Yeah, I think anybody can get beat, Mike. Mm-hmm. If you come in unprepared or, you know, maybe overlooking the match or, I mean, maybe potential injuries or some. I mean, there's so many factors that go into a ball game. Yeah, and it's very possible. The thing is, as far as talent, you know, maybe not all, you know, 50 players are as talented on Georgia as they are Alabama, but the ones that will be on that field certainly are. And, you know, this game's going to be decided by the backups that come in. I mean, that's just how close I think this game will be. It's these maybe a young lineman giving another one a breather, and does he let down an assignment and let a sack happen or something like that? I just think it's that second tier of your team is what's really going to decide this game. And I think if they're on it, is Fromm throwing like he was last week, I mean, in windows that can't be defended, then absolutely. They could get beat.
Well, Shane, it's interesting that you say backups making a stepping up and performing here, because Saban was asked kind of a stupid ass question. He was basically asked, he was asked, you know, if you'd give away information here. And, you know, so Saban wasn't all, this, when you see stuff like this, you see that Saban is not a damn robot. He just acts like it 90% of the time, unless he's got something smart to say. So here's Nick Saban on, he was asked, you know, how they'll replace a defensive back that will be out for the first half due to a targeting call.
I don't know, but as soon as I get out of here, I'll call Kirby and tell them exactly what we're going to do so they would be able to prepare for that and, you know, all that. So I'm not willing to share what we're going to do, you know, right now. But I'll call him, then you call him and ask him, and then he can tell you, okay?
All right, Shane. What are your thoughts on this one?
Oh, what an evil ass laugh, man. dude, I loved it. He's like, let me just call Kirby. Let me just text him all my information. You could go ask him. He's just playing, man. And I do like to see a little bit of lighter side of Saban. And it seems like, you know, I don't know if it's me or if it's just, it feels like he loosens up a little bit when it gets toward the end of these seasons.
One note I should say here on Alabama, Shane, this is something that came out so late we didn't have a chance to discuss it on our last podcast, but Alabama linebacker Terrell Lewis, he tore his ACL, Shane, there in fall camp. I think it was fall camp. It was definitely in the summer leading up to the season. It may have been right before fall camp, but regardless, whenever it happened, he has not played this year. He was projected to be a starter, big-time defender here for Alabama. And he teased. He said, you know, he put it out there on Twitter, debating if I should pick up where I left off. And then another Alabama linebacker, Mac Wilson, said, we may have a surprise for y'all this weekend. And apparently Lewis is back at practice. It's been 4.5 months since he tore his ACL, but looks like he's going to give it a go because obviously he knows the ramifications of this game. I mean, how crazy is it that Alabama could have I don't know if this guy's going to start. I think that'd be kind of crazy from not playing, but maybe just kind of knocking the rust off leading into a playoff appearance that Alabama could be getting one of their better defenders back only 4.5 months from tearing his ACL.
That's crazy, man. I'm telling you, it's crazy. And I don't, like you said, I don't think he'll have like a full-time role. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not game ready. But don't be surprised, like you said, for him to get out there a couple plays and or at least be a decoy. I mean, something that Kirby has got to plan for because there's potential they could be there. And you know, if you're planning on somebody being there, you expect them to be as good as the time they left. So I don't know. I think it's just another little factor to worry about for Kirby, but I honestly don't think he's going to have much impact on this game.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chad, so let's jump to the other side of this game, jump to Athens, where Kirby Smart met with the media on Monday. And I thought this was kind of particularly interesting, what he had to say on just what he kind of recalls about being a member of Alabama's coaching staff and just kind of, you know, basically winning the game before and pregame, just psyching people out, or even they get too amped up and psych them themselves out for the game. And basically, you know, I think the thought process here is there's no chance that that's going to happen at Georgia this week. So here's Kirby Smart on all that.
Yeah, I don't know that it helps at all. I think the biggest thing is preparing your team for the right way to play and not getting overwhelmed by the moment. If anything, I've probably seen more teams lose it in the warm-ups just trying to get all amped up and all that. I mean, you got to go play your best game. You got to be yourself, and you got to be the best version of you, and you can't worry about the rest. A lot of those teams that I witnessed that, they didn't have near as good players as us either. So I think when you look at it and you say, okay, what is the talent level? What is the talent gap? They've got an extremely talented team. We respect that, but we also got a good football team, and our kids got a lot of pride in performance, and they're not basing that on last year's, because there's a lot of those kids off that team. I mean, there's very few, I know defensively for us, there's very few guys that are back returning stars. We've got a few on offense. But teams are different. Their team's different too. So this is two different teams, and good thing is we both get to go on the field and play.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, do you buy the fact, I mean, I think it would be hard to argue against it, but just that Georgia basically will have no fear of Alabama heading into this game. Are you buying that?
No, I'm not. Just because when you talk about Alabama and you talk about Georgia, I mean, when's the last time Georgia has beat Alabama? So anybody on this team, nobody's beat them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that plays a factor. It may be small. It may be minute. But, you know, it has to weigh on your mind when you're looking across. And there's the national champs, the ones that put you out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's also got to be that feeling that, you know, we hung in there and we almost beat these guys last year. And we think we're better this year than we were last. So, and you hear it with a defensive lineman trying to make excuses for Tua. Well, now they can't make that excuse. We got film on Tua. We know what he's going to do. So, I don't know. The more I think about it, maybe they're not that nervous about these guys.
You talked yourself into a 180, Shane, but I'm glad you say that because I think you got it right the second time around. I don't think there's any chance. I know this is a different roster than last year, but hell, they won a playoff game. They won an SEC championship. A lot of those same guys are still here. They played in a lot of big games at this point. I don't think there's any chance that Georgia's intimidated by Alabama. I know, like you said, there's no one on the team that's beating them, but if anything, I think that drives them even harder. And I don't know. They just seem to be peaking. And I think even if they start slow, I think they'll be able to bounce back. I don't think they're going to crumble. And I've been saying this for months. It looks crazier the more Alabama plays because they just look so damn dominant. But this reminds me of Alabama, Florida, Part 2 in the SEC Championship. They played back-to-back years. Alabama, and people forget how damn good a Florida was. They had Tebow, and they had a murderer at tight end, and they had Percy Harvin. They had an NFL player at basically every position. Mm-hmm. They smoked Alabama the first year in the SEC Championship game, I think. And then the second year, Alabama just whooped them, and no one was picking it.
Yeah.
I think we could see something similar. I would not be shocked at all if Georgia wins this game. I think the motivation, all of that, is in Georgia's favor. And to go off that also, it looks like they're getting healthy at the right time because Kirby Smart also noted that, I don't know if Monty Rice is going to play the linebacker. He's out of his walking boots, so that's a good sign. Obviously, because he can't get out there with a boot on. But
yeah,
Cade Mays, Ben Cleveland, Trey Hill, it sounds like Trey and Ben Cleveland, they're good to go. Cade Mays, likely good to go. He's probably a backup at this point if everyone's healthy anyway, but you can never have enough linemen when you're going into an Alabama game. It seems like they're getting healthy at the right time, too.
Yeah, and then I also worried about Alabama, just the fact that they have steamrolled everybody they played. Maybe there's a little bit of a, arrogance to it. And I'm sure one thing about Saban, though, I think he'll ground these guys before the game, but you gotta be wondering about that too. Like, these guys just think they can't be touched. What happens when Tua does get rattled, or they start getting to him, or maybe they get a couple picks or something like that? How do they react? How do they bounce back? So there's so many. I mean, this game can go either way, and that's what's so exciting about it.
Well, Shane, I know I'm ready for it. I don't know about you, but that's basically all I got today. You got anything before we jump off here?
No, that is pretty much it. I appreciate everybody hanging out with us today. We thought it was going to be kind of a slow news day, but then everybody started getting fired, or getting other jobs. So I love that's what Tennessee does to get past these losing seasons. We just focus on the next best thing, and everybody loves a good coaching carousel. So, but I do appreciate everybody hanging out with us, and if you got a little extra time one day, we really would appreciate a rate and review on iTunes. That really does help us out a lot. But that's pretty much all I got, man. You got anything?
No, sir. Shane, I'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for joining me as always. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.